Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to Interchange. My name is Ashley Beeman, and this week we take a look at the topic of food, specifically in the context of sustainability and social justice. Every week, all 52 weeks of the year, from 4 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, Mother Hubbard's Cupboard opens its door to a long, winding line of people, such as families, the homeless, and others who are in need of food. Every week, more than 2,000 people walk through the doors of the small operation near downtown Bloomington to find a variety of foods, from fresh vegetables to cornflakes, from baby food to breads and canned goods. But, according to the people who work at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, it's not all about the food, not exactly. Rather, it's also about social justice. This week, Interchange reporter William Morris speaks with Stephanie Solomon and Amanda Nicky about the work and mission of this organization. You're listening to Interchange.
Hello, I'm William Morris, and I'm here with Stephanie Solomon, Garden and Nutrition Coordinator, and Amanda Nicky, Director of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. Welcome to Interchange.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Stephanie, let's start with the work that you do at Mother Hubbard's. It's easy to say that you coordinate gardens, but I believe it's more than that, isn't it? How would you describe your work?
Well, I would say that my work is really about building food security. The garden program isn't just about growing food. It's about bringing people together and learning how we can become more self-sufficient. We definitely live in tough economic times, and being able to grow our own food is an essential skill, but also it gives us a reason to spend time outside, be active, get to know our community. Regardless of people's backgrounds, we all eat. And so a garden where we're growing food is a great place for people to come together and build community food security and personal food security.
Now, how many gardens does Mother Hubbard's Cupboard have?
Well, at this point right now, we are actively growing food in 3 gardens, and we are building soil in an additional garden. So altogether 4.
When I think of these gardens and I think of the purpose of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, which is to help to give people food, mm-hmm. I wonder how much food comes from the gardens? How much food that the people get every week, 2 hours a day from 4 to 6 p.m., mm-hmm. Monday through Friday, how much of that food comes from the garden?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on what part of the season we're in. The Mother Hubbard's Cupboard Community Garden Program is part of the larger Plant a Row for Hungry program. And so the Plant a Row for the Hungry program, which is a big partnership between a lot of organizations, makes sure that emergency food assistance organizations such as Mother Hubbard's Cupboard have fresh, local, homegrown produce coming in. And so that's either the bumper crop from the farmers at the farmers market or an extra row planted at a home garden specifically for those in need through Plant a Row. And altogether in a growing season, it tends to be about 30,000 pounds of produce. And we, from the Mother Hubbard's Cupboard Gardens, we're tiny compared to farms. So what we bring in is between around 2,500 pounds. Though I really see that potentially doubling because of our space increase this year. And so, for example, today what we were harvesting in the garden before I came here was some basil, some dill, some green beans, kale, what else? Raspberries, little bags of raspberries. And so it's significant. I mean, that means when you think about buying those things at the store, that's some pretty good quality, expensive stuff. So it's definitely a significant input in the pantry. But when you think about the scale of it, it's really the larger Plant a Row for the Hungry program that brings, you know, pounds and pounds and pounds of food in to the pantry every day.
So the three gardens yield 2,500 pounds of food per year?
Yes. Yeah.
That's quite a bit of food.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, we were laughing about it earlier, that there's the food that weighs a lot and the food that doesn't weigh as much. And some of our healthiest stuff, like our greens, our collard greens and kale and Swiss chard, it doesn't weigh so much, but that is some nutrient-dense food that's coming into the food pantry.
While it is quite a bit of food, I suspect, though, it's not enough.
Oh, well, when it comes to fresh whole foods, I mean, one of the cool parts about my job is I got to work in the pantry for a while. And it is true that, you know, people, they go straight to the produce section. It's a really popular thing. And, you know, it's, we could have endless amounts of produce and people will eat it. It's definitely, it's the stuff that you need to have a healthy growing family, and especially this fresh homegrown food. It's an incredible addition. So yeah, if anybody out there is growing gardens, you know, we're always looking for more fresh homegrown food.
One part of the gardens, as I understand, is not just the distribution of food, but also the educational component of what you do. Could you tell us some about that?
Yeah, well, there's different levels that our education happens. I think some of the most poignant learning happens in the garden. So when a patron volunteer, a community volunteer comes in, the kind of most intense learning that happens is when you come and grow food with us. So whether it's learning about soil building or harvesting techniques, really education is happening every time that we are working together in the garden. But we also offer in-pantry education. And what that means is a lot of people can't make it from the food pantry out into the garden. And so we have information sheets. We have seeds and plants that we hand out. And along with those, we hand out information on growing your own garden. But then the educational, that's more what you think of traditionally as the educational part of the garden program, is our 30-plus garden and nutrition classes. So not only can you take intro to vegetable gardening, backyard and worm composting, but then once you have all these plants and maybe a bunch of tomatoes, you can take our canning class with our nutrition program. And so the education really spans the food system, from growing your own food and then what to do once you've grown these fresh whole foods.
Well, let's imagine that there's a booklet with the curriculum for Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. And I open the book and I look at a list of classes. Tell me some of the list of classes. You've mentioned some, but this is very interesting. There's canning 101.
Yep.
Can you tell us some others?
Well, so there's canning and jamming, and that's always been in partnership with the extension, the local extension office. We have bread baking. That is just, you know, talk about a way to save money, baking your own bread. We have introduction to vegetable gardening that we do real early in the season, late February or March, and then again in May. And then we have garden planning 101 that we do with People's University Bloomington. And that sometimes even happens in the winter. That's for us fiends like me who are garden obsessed and, you know, get their garden catalogs in January and they're ready to plan the garden.
And this is garden planning, not garden planting.
Right, okay. Exactly. Garden planning 101, and then introduction to vegetable gardening that I talked about before is more about what do you do when you're out there and you're ready to get started. And then we have farm tours that we do, and we consider those part of our workshop series. They give people the opportunity to learn about growing food, but also to see a part of our local food system. And I think if we're about building food security, then connecting folks from the food pantry and the community with farmers is one of the great ways to do that.
Let's talk about this concept. You mentioned this, food security. Now, I don't know how much our listeners really get a grasp of what that idea means. What does that mean, food security?
Well, what it means to me is that we can trust that our families are going to be fed. And it on a really big level, that brings one thing that we're really involved in is starting a Bloomington Food Policy Council, which Michael Simmons from Parks and Recreation and I, Maggie Sullivan from Nature's Crossroads, came together and said, how can we build food security? So we're thinking about policy and growers, building a region where we really know that the people in our region know how to support ourselves by growing food. And with the way that our food system works right now, that's a rather complicated thing. But I can simplify it in my mind that I feel secure. I feel like I have food security if I know how to grow my own food. And if the people in my community and the farmers in my community know how to grow a good amount of food. And so that's how I think of food security.
As I listen to you talk about this, I think of President Roosevelt's admonition of freedom from fear. And part of the freedom from fear would be the idea or the confidence that you're going to have food.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we always, when you are needing emergency food assistance, there's reason to feel, you know, a lot of scarcity in your life. And I think that one thing that we get from our gardens, even though, you know, we have failures, everybody has crop failures, but you inevitably have abundance, you know, and that's the feeling that you get in a community garden is that there is abundance, whether it's your green beans or it's a great year for tomatoes. If anybody's ever grown zucchinis, they know that feeling. There's a definite feeling of abundance when you garden. And so I think that it's a really empowering thing to have people who are suffering from scarcity of healthy food to be able to go out to a garden and grow healthy food on your own. It's a really empowering process.
Tell us about your patrons. You mentioned the word mm-hmm. patrons and the people that use the gardens, the people that plant the food and people that get food from them. Tell us mm-hmm. about them.
Well, patrons of the Mother Hubbard's Cupboard Food Pantry are anybody who shops with us. Back in the beginning, they chose the term patrons over client or customer, but really, you know, it's anybody who meets the guidelines of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard and shops with us. And so patron volunteers would be patrons who make use of our food pantry, meet the guidelines of our food pantry, and also garden with us. And so what that means is that people not only can come, you know, and be out in the gardens, but then instead of going all the way to the food pantry to pick up that fresh produce, they can just harvest while they're there. And so it's a pretty good situation where people can come garden with us, take a bag of food home. Obviously, it doesn't happen as much in the spring when we're still planting, but this time of the season, there's definitely harvesting to be done.
Do you find that you have more elderly patrons or young patrons or female patrons? Or?
Well, that would be, I mean, it's the most of our patrons you will see in the food pantry. And we have in the gardens, it tends to be more young families and young people. That come, you know, patron volunteers. But to talk about, like, who is actually shopping, who are our patrons, that would be more of an Amanda question, I would say.
The people that come to Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, you're referring to as patrons. The people mm-hmm. who work in the garden, what is the term that we use for them?
Well, we have people who shop at the pantry, who work in the garden. Those are patron volunteers, patron gardeners. We have community volunteers. So these are people who either are real interested in building social justice through community gardening, or they just love to garden. They want to come out and grow food with us. So it's about, so there's a mixture. There's community volunteers who are less likely to harvest before they leave. And then there are patron volunteers who are more likely to harvest before they leave. It's pretty hard to tell the difference, though. It's really like we're a family of people gardening together.
I know one of the things that you do is you offer educational programs in gardening for young people.
Oh, yes.
For teenagers, yeah. Adolescents, even mm-hmm. younger than that, I guess, maybe mm-hmm. elementary school age. Can you talk about that some? Because I know that sounds very special to me.
Oh, yes, it's very special to us. We as an organization believe deeply that if the children in our community are getting connected to the food system through gardening and nutrition education, that we are strengthening their families, we're strengthening the health of our community. So we have a youth garden program where we work with local youth-serving organizations to offer garden and nutrition education. We work with our longest-running youth garden partner, partnership is with the Banneker Community Center, which is run through Parks and Recreation. A lot of those kids started with us when they're younger and are, you know, getting older, a little less interested in us unless we're making salsa. So we work with them usually starting in March or April, and then through, you know, when they go back to school in August, and then sometimes with the after school program in the fall. And they help us plant and tend the garden, and then we prepare food from the garden. But we also work with the Crestmont Boys and Girls Club, Head Start, and Girls Inc. So we've got a lot of kids coming in and out of the gardens of all ages.
You're listening to Interchange. My name is William Morris, and I'm speaking with Stephanie Solomon and Amanda Nicky of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. Stephanie, you just mentioned that oftentimes you work with young kids, and then maybe as they enter into adolescence, sometimes they stop gardening or they move maybe away or not as active mm-hmm. in the gardens. What do you think we could do to keep them in the gardens?
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like part of me was joking, because actually we've started to get, just starting the last couple of weeks, a group from Stepping Stone, which is all teenagers who are some of the most enthusiastic gardeners I've had, really good natured and happy to be in the garden with us. And so it definitely depends on the teens. And I think, you know, what we can do is keep making food. I mean, everybody wants to eat tasty food. And so even if we have a harder time getting our adolescent and teens to have a good time planting and weeding and doing the grunt work in the garden, we can certainly engage them when we're back in the kitchen, you know, making the food. Actually, harvesting, and everybody's interested in picking raspberries and tomatoes. So, you know, it's different age groups. I mean, my parents were shocked when I got involved in this kind of work, because I would never help them in the yard. And so, you know, there are ages where working outside is just not going to appeal to you unless you have a certain kind of personality. But picking vegetables and fruits, that appeals to most people regardless of age.
Well, you mentioned that salsa was popular with the young people. Is there mm-hmm. another food? Raspberries, those are popular too with the young people?
Mm-hmm. Fried green tomatoes, you know, who knows how healthy those are, but those are a popular one too. Also, gosh, what else have we done? Oh, this one surprises everybody. Kale chips. We had a group of Girls Inc. girls just so excited about our kale chips. And last year we did them with the Banneker group too. But you take some kale and rip it up, rub it in olive oil and soy sauce and salt and pepper, garlic powder, and then bake it until it's crispy. And you know, it's a nice salty snack. And then you also have one of the healthiest foods, kale, being eaten by a group of kids. It's pretty miraculous.
What's it taste like without the salt?
You know, I think if you season it right, it still can be pretty tasty without the salt. But I don't know if I'd try that with a group of kids. But we do use high quality soy sauce or sea salt. So
when you look ahead into the next year or two or three, I think you mentioned to me you've been in this position for 4 years now. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
When you look ahead into the next year or two or three, what goals, objectives do you see for the nutrition and garden end of things?
Well, we were just talking about this today, and really I want to see more youth gardening and school gardening happening in this area. And whether it's us, we don't care. Whoever's doing it, we want to support them, youth and school gardening. And we want to engage more folks in the gardens, have as many people coming out and growing food with us as possible, as many people from the pantry as possible, as many people from the community. We're all about building food security.
As the nutrition and garden coordinator, what do you do in the winter?
Oh, well, you know, the winter doesn't end up lasting as long as you would think. We start a lot of our plants in January, and we're, you know, planning for the season, hiring garden interns. There's paperwork to catch up with, grants to write, you know. It has depended. Now we have a development director, so she's writing the grants. But, you know, there's plenty of planning to do in the wintertime.
If you have any questions or a comment for either Stephanie Solomon or Amanda Nikki of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, please give us a call at 323-1200. You're listening to Interchange. We'll be right back.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloom Magazine. The June-July issue of Bloom is the fifth annual home and garden issue, featuring homes where the living is easy and growing your own fruits and vegetables. Bloom Magazine is available at more than 200 businesses in the Bloomington area. More information is available at magbloom.com.
Welcome back to Interchange. I'm here with Stephanie Solomon and Amanda Nikki of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. We spent the first segment talking with Stephanie about all of the different things they do in the garden and nutrition department. And now we're going to turn our attention to Amanda. And Amanda, you're the director of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard.
Yes.
And how long have you been in that position?
Almost a year and a half.
Amanda, from all the things that I've been learning, I know that Mother Hubbard's Cupboard gives away food and gives food from 4 o'clock to 6 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Is that correct?
That's right.
But I know it's about more than just giving away food, isn't it?
That's true. At Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, we envision a community where everyone has access to good, nutritious food. And for us, that's whole foods and that's produce. And so what I think is really unique about the hub is our dual mission, I guess we could call it. And that includes all of our programs in that we want to meet people where they are. And so we do that through emergency food assistance in the food pantry. We're meeting that immediate need of food, but we go beyond that and we educate people and give them the resources and the knowledge that they need to better care for themselves. As Stephanie has mentioned, growing your own food and knowing that you can rely on that is really empowering. And so we think that those two things coming together really, really is the best way to get to that vision of high quality food, good produce for everyone who needs it.
And what other resources do you offer?
Well, we provide, as Stephanie mentioned before, we try to provide seeds and plant starts for patrons because sometimes that can be an obstacle to home gardening, just the supplies that you need to get started. The education components provide kind of that knowledge that you need in how to successfully carry out a home garden. We partner with a lot of different agencies and we'll connect folks with things that they need in the community. We're a United Way member agency, so we work really closely with a lot of those agencies and agencies beyond that.
Let's talk about your partnership with all of these different organizations around the city. Let's talk about that in a minute. After a visit, I visited Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, and I was just surprised at the, I would maybe say, the managerial complexity of this whole thing. You guys are really puppet masters, and a lot's going on. Not puppet masters in any bad sense, but, you know, you're having to do a lot of things over there. Tell us about a day at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard.
Okay. You're right. It is a really complex system over there. We are doing a number of things, and there's only 3 full-time staff and 2 part-time staff. So
Every day, Monday through Friday, we're moving about 3,000 to 5,000 pounds of food. And so I'll walk you through a typical day in the pantry and how that happens. Because it's a lot of food and there's only five of us.
In one day? And how much food in one day?
About 3,000 to 5,000 pounds, depending on the day. So a typical day would start in the morning, maybe around 9:30 or 10. And our pantry coordinator takes a crew of volunteers to the food bank, the Hoosier Hills Food Bank. And there, those volunteers fill a huge box truck with food.
And how many volunteers?
On a shopping shift, maybe 8 to 10 volunteers. We have 150 regular volunteers throughout the year, though, that work in the pantry and in the gardens and other and the nutrition program. So, you know, they're loading this truck with about 3,000 to 5,000 pounds of food. And
every day.
And I should mention that it's all by hand. So, you know, we really rely very heavily on volunteer power. They load that truck and they go back to the pantry and they unload that truck. So that food spends, you know, a good half hour on that truck. And it's all taken back off again, brought into the pantry by hand, put on the shelves, put in storage in the coolers and the freezers. They sort some things, put some things up, and that takes a couple of hours, maybe 2 to 3 hours of work from volunteers. Then around just before 3 o'clock, the pantry opens up again for volunteers, and we get a good crew in there between 3 and 4, and they're unloading another truck, which is a delivery from the Hoosier Hills Food Bank. So again, another 2 to 3,000 pounds of food that's coming off of that truck and going into the pantry, all by hand again. This is really heavy lifting. Going into the pantry, sorting produce, we compost anything that isn't edible, cleaning, sorting things, putting it on the shelves, getting the place ready and clean for patrons to come in at 4 o'clock.
So this is 5,000 pounds of food a day?
Yes.
3,000 pounds in the morning, and then this last stop before 4 o'clock it comes, brings another 3,000 pounds of food.
Almost. The days are different with pickups and deliveries, but on average,
About 5,000 pounds of food a day.
Yeah. Moved all by hand. I can't stress that enough because I've done it, and it's heavy, and it's hard work.
And it's volunteers.
And it's all volunteers. And I should add that over 90% of our volunteers are patrons of our pantry. So they're people that are using our services, that it means enough to them to come and lift 3,000 to 5,000 pounds of food.
which really goes to this idea that if 90% of the volunteers are patrons, this really is not like food handouts.
No.
I mean, the people are really working, keeping the store. It's almost like a co-op.
It's a family. Mm. It's people that like one another and care for one another, working together.
So 90% of the 150 volunteers are patrons.
On average, yeah. And so they're, you know, getting everything ready to be opened at 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, our pantry manager goes out and welcomes everyone. At about just before 4 o'clock, a line starts forming outside. And sometimes that line is so long that it'll wrap around and go over to the adjoining businesses. And at 4 o'clock, the doors open, and we let in families about 5 at a time. And they check in at the desk. There's a really simple sign-in process. They get a bag per person in their household and an extra bag for produce because we really want to encourage them to take as much produce as they can use. And then they go through the pantry and they shop. And we call it shop because the place is set up like a little grocery store. And we're unique in that we focus on fresh produce, but we're unique in the pantry in a few different ways. We operate on a client choice model, which means the people choose what they want. We're not handing them a bag or a box of food and saying, this is what you should have. We really think that allowing clients to choose the foods that they want for their family empowers them, and it minimizes waste. You know, we don't want people taking home a bunch of stuff that they won't use and that they will then just throw away. And another way that I think we're really unique is that we operate on the honor system. We do have a set of guidelines, and Stephanie mentioned that earlier, but we don't require proof. We don't require ID. You come in and you tell us you have a need and you say that you meet one of our guidelines, we take you at your word because we think it's important to build a trusting environment and that when you respect people, you can trust them to do the right thing.
So from 4 to 6, you're open.
We're
the families
open from,
are coming through, five families at a time.
They're going through. They're choosing what they need. Then they're going out. There's no checkout process or anything like that. They just go on out. And volunteers during that time are restocking shelves, helping people go through the pantry if they have too much to carry, or helping them out to their cars, cleaning and kind of doing all the work that needs to be done in that space. And then at 6 o'clock we close and the pantry is bare. Everything that we brought in for the most part is out.
Is gone.
It's gone. And then we're all ready to do it again the next day.
Is it ever gone at 5:30 and then that's it?
Sometimes we're almost completely bare by 5:30. Sometimes produce is gone by then. Or
Erin's really good at making sure volunteers restock, though.
Now, so who is Erin?
She's our pantry manager.
Yeah. And what is her name? Erin?
Erin Marshall. Yeah.
And she's very good at being. She's very good at being sure that things are getting restocked.
That things last. Yeah. She's really good at making sure that what is needed throughout the shift is there, and that it's kind of put out fairly.
Do you have refrigerated goods?
We do. We have a few storage coolers and a cooler that's for shopping, and then we have one storage freezer and a freezer that's for shopping. So it's not a lot of space, but we can store enough food to last about a day, maybe a day and a half of shopping, the four to six shift.
That gives us an idea of what your daily operations are like. I know another part of your job, both of you, is establishing and maintaining connections with other organizations in the Bloomington community. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I can. We have developed amazing partnerships over the years that the Hub has been around, with a number of other organizations in town. And on the back of our brochure, you see that long list.
And it's a long list.
And I'm not going to read all of those.
No, but just a couple of them. There's the Boys and Girls Club. And
yeah,
there's a lot of them. There's 25 organizations.
There's a lot. And I would say, you know, the Hoosier Hills Food Bank is a really important partner. We could not do what we do without them. We receive the majority of our food from them. We are one of their largest member agencies. They're one of their largest member partners, or partner agencies is the word I'm looking for. Perry Township is a really important partnership. They provide our rent in kind. We have that pantry space for no charge, and that is a huge savings to us each year. And they've been supportive in other ways with grants and expanding our space. We were half the size that we are now just a few years ago, so they're very helpful. The Parks and Rec Department is really important, as Stephanie has talked about. Our partnerships through the garden program, the majority of our gardens are on Parks and Rec land, and we just steward the space. So they provide the land and the infrastructure that we just couldn't do ourselves.
How much land do you have if you put the three gardens together?
It's about, what did we figure out? A little over a quarter of an acre.
Nice.
All, if you squeezed them all together.
And that's yielding 2,500 pounds of food a year.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that is at the Crestmont Community Garden, which is by and far our largest garden.
I see that one of your partnerships is with the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, SPEA.
Yes. I'm actually a SPEA grad.
Oh!
So I'm proud to say that. I was a SPEON. We work with their SPEA Fellows program, and every year get a fellow that works with us for the two years that they're there, and helps us in a variety of ways with development and grants and that kind of thing. But a lot of our volunteers come from SPEA. We've got a lot of supporters that come from SPEA.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you will be confronting if you look ahead? What are some challenges that you have there at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard? Obviously, there's a lot of success there, but there must be some things late at night when you're sleeping that you dream we could have or want. What's on your wish list?
What's on my wish list? Well, I think that, when we think about hunger, it's been around for a really long time, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I'm not naive or stupid. But I think that as we look to what is the most effective way to fight hunger, it is equipping people with the skills that they need to take care of themselves. I think as we look to emergency food assistance in the future, what is that going to look like? I think it's going to look like programs teaching people how to grow their own food. The food pantry will always play a huge part in what we do, but I think that we don't know what's going to happen, and we have to be prepared for the changes that might come in those kinds of programs. I think that the need is really great in our community for emergency food assistance, whatever it looks like. And for us, space is always an issue. We're serving almost 2,000 people a week in a space that was comfortably serving about 1,000 people a week just a few years ago. So we've doubled the number of people that we're seeing, but our spaces remain the same. And last year we distributed over 1 million pounds of food, gave out almost 100,000 bags of food to people in need in our community. And that's a huge increase from the last few years of what we've seen. So our wish list, I don't know, to build capacity so that we can meet that need.
And another quarter acre of land.
And another.
Oh, yeah. With chickens and, you know.
Sheep.
You mentioned that the need for emergency food assistance in Bloomington is great. And it's very interesting for people who come to Bloomington. I've been here 6 years myself. And when we see Bloomington from the outside, we see a community that's prosperous, educated, bountiful, some might even say. But yet we have a great need for emergency food assistance. Where does this come from? It's a little bit paradoxical.
I think that's true. But I think that we have a very high poverty rate in Monroe County. And I think that it's easy to ignore that. It's easy to not see it, perhaps, is the best way to say that. But in the pantry, we see, you asked earlier about kind of what our patrons are like. Who are our patrons? And I can tell you, our patrons are people that you probably see every day. They're people who have jobs, who have families, who have chronic illnesses, who've been unemployed. They're people who didn't think that they would be in a position to stand outside in line and wait for food. They might be your neighbor. They might be someone you work with. The face of hunger is it's not easily described, I think. It's not one face. It changes. And just anecdotally, the last 6 months or so, heard stories in the pantry of people saying just those things. I never thought that I would be here. I've heard about you, but I never thought that I would need your services. And we probably get 3 or 4 calls from people a day asking where we are and what do I have to do to come down there and get food. I just lost my job, or my kids are sick, or, you know, all sorts of things.
It's interesting, this idea of the face of hunger. There's also, I would imagine, there's let me scratch that. In all of Indiana, I think it's surprising to me that there's only one of a kind. Mother Hubbard's is a sort of very unusual organization in the state of Indiana.
I think so, as far as we know.
I feel like in the country, like we've tried to find, you know, client choice, garden program, nutrition program, like this kind of mixture of stuff that's going on at the hub. I think we're pretty unique.
In what way?
Well, that we bring all those programs together, that we look at the issue of hunger and try to approach it from all sides, that we meet people where they are, but we are trying to build the skills that they need so that they can take care of themselves, that we are about emergency food service, but self-sufficiency.
A minute ago, I was thinking about what the face of hunger is, and you had mentioned, Amanda, that the face of hunger are faces we see every day, and we never really know what that face looks like. It's very interesting, as I've talked to you and Stephanie, about the mind of hunger, though, because, of course, when we look at TV, when we drive down any of the streets here, the foods that we're tempted to eat are fast foods, convenient foods, microwave foods, and yet the foods that you're giving out are really the antithesis of all of that.
Right.
That's part of your process.
Yes. And that's, our focus on fresh whole foods and is not just about the health side of it, but it's about the money side of it. It's most efficient and it's economical to prepare whole foods and to bake your own bread and to make things from scratch. And I think that that's something that we've moved away from when we think about food.
I'm here with Stephanie Solomon and Amanda Nikki, and you are listening to Interchange. We'll be right back.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Tunes, a local songwriting contest now accepting entries for their third annual song competition. Winning songs will be included on the 2011 Blooming Tunes CD, and the top four songwriters will be invited to perform in concert on August 28th. To learn more or submit a song by the June 30th deadline, you can go online at blooming-tunes.com. That's blooming-tunes.com.
Welcome back to Interchange. My name is William Morris, and I'm here with Stephanie Solomon, the Garden and Nutrition Coordinator for Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, and Amanda Nikki, the Executive Director of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. And we have really covered a lot of ground today, and we still got a few more things to talk about. Amanda and Stephanie, we haven't really talked a little bit about the history of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. I don't really know much about that history. Could you share some of that with our listeners?
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. I came into the organization, I guess I started volunteering probably in about 2004. And I think it's a really beautiful history. In 1998, our founders, Jessica Mott and Laura Marks, both of them with families, really believed that everybody deserves access to healthy food. And they started a food pantry based on that premise. And so, you know, it started, I think, maybe out of Jessica's garage and grew into what it is. I mean, the largest food pantry in the region, I think we are now. So it has a really interesting history. And then, of course, you know, people made that direct connection between healthy foods and gardening. And so 2001, a garden program was created. And we've had some amazing, amazing women part of the history, from Jessica and Laura to Libby Yarnell, who was our director for quite a while, and Brooke Gentile, who was the director for the first couple of years of my working with the Hub. And I'm amazed. I recently learned about Meg Gardner, who was the original garden coordinator. Just these really strong women who made this organization happen.
You two are following up in some big footsteps.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
But you know, it's amazing when you think that the organization started in 1998. It started with just two women who were struggling with poverty. And now you have the 5 paid staff, the 150 volunteers. I mean, it's grown tremendously.
I think it's grown more than anyone imagined it ever would. I think that's a very true statement.
Yeah. And it grows naturally because there's the need and the interest. I mean, we were primed for this kind of an organization in this community.
And we really adapt to the needs of the community and the needs of our patrons. So I think a lot of the programming that we offer grows organically out of that feedback from our patrons of what kinds of skills they want, what kinds of things they need.
How was it funded? How is Mother Hubbard's Cupboard funded?
In a variety of ways. We have great support from individual donors. We have a huge individual donor base, and we couldn't do what we do without those people who give, you know, even $20 a year.
And this is in addition to the partnerships. I mean, this is another thing.
Right. And, you know, at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, we can take a dollar and leverage that to obtain 10 pounds of food. Because of the low maintenance costs that we pay with the food bank and the large quantity of food that the food bank gives us for no charge at all. And so we can really make a dollar stretch in, you know, no way that anyone else, I think, can. And so we receive individual donations. We receive grants. We have a lot of in-kind support through in-kind rent and in-kind food donations, a lot of volunteer support. So we have a pretty diverse funding stream, I think, which is good for our financial stability as an organization. And that's been strategic. I think Libby and then Brooke both worked really hard to make sure that the hub was always financially secure and protected.
Amanda, Stephanie, one of the buzzwords that comes up when we think about community development, when we think about organic gardening and some other things is sustainability. Can you help us get a wrap on this word, sustainability, as it pertains to Mother Hubbard's garden?
Yeah, so
Mother Hubbard's cupboard.
Yeah, I think it starts in the pantry where we do the best that we can to minimize waste as much as possible. And I think one of the most amazing things that happens is that we turn our food waste into healthy soil in our gardens. So, for example, today our amazing compost volunteers, Tom Shelton and Amy Mishler, came and picked up a bunch of containers of rotting food from the food pantry. They drove it over in Tom's truck to the Crestmont Community Garden. And then we, you know, added it to the compost piles. And talk about sustainability. It's reducing waste. It's taking advantage of the nutrients in those foods to turn it into healthy soil. It's also saving money. I mean, I really think sustainability, sometimes like the green movement, it can end up, you know, being a marketing scheme and seeming like, you know, it's expensive. But really, when you get down to it, sustainability, if done right, using sustainable practices can actually save money. So when you're composting your food waste, you're not paying to have it hauled away. And then you can turn that straight into fresh garden soil, and you don't have to buy fertilizers or soil amendments because compost is one of the best soil amendments that you can get. And so I think that sustainability runs through the agency in a lot of ways. But of course, being the garden coordinator and a proponent of composting, that's where I get the most impressed by the sustainability movement in our organization.
And I think that I would add, we are bringing food into the pantry that otherwise would go into the waste stream. And so we are saving food every day. The food that's donated to the food bank and that all the partner agencies take from the food bank is food that wouldn't be used in any other way. So that's a huge way that we build on that idea of sustainability.
It's like one of those cool synchronistic things between Mother Hubbard's Cupboard and the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, because they are really about saving food. And I mean, their meal share program, the pickups that they do from local grocery stores, the food bank is about saving and redistributing food. the Plan a Row for the Hungry program, that's all the stuff at the farmer's market that the farmers couldn't sell, and maybe they couldn't keep it between that time and the next market. So, yeah, it's one of the cool ways, I think, that we connect with the Hoosier Hills Food Bank.
You know, from 1998, when Mother Hubbard's Cupboard began, to 2011, we've seen a lot of political shifts in the winds through those 13 years. Do these shifting political climates, do they affect Mother Hubbard's Cupboard?
Well, I think that hunger as an issue is something that really goes beyond the political climate. It goes beyond the changes in politics. It's people are hungry. That doesn't change. That really doesn't change. And I think that when children don't have enough to eat, or when families have to choose between paying bills and buying food, that's really a community issue. That's a human issue. It's something that we should all be concerned about and should care about and should take action. And I think that Bloomington is a really caring and generous community. It greatly supports the work that we do at the Hub. And really, that support comes from all sides of the political spectrum. So regardless of what's going on politically in the world, people really believe in what we do. And I think that we really believe in just the effectiveness of helping people where they are, helping them meet those immediate needs, and equipping them to care for themselves in the future. And, you know, when you're hungry, very little else matters.
When I think of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, in some of the things that you've told me earlier and today, I see the food pantry, the community garden, and nutrition education that both of you have talked about. And there's a connection between these three ideas, between the food pantry, the community garden, and nutrition education. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, that's fun to talk about. Well, I can go back to that compost we talked about. So the food gets dropped off at the food pantry, and then we end up with those, you know, the smushed fruits at the bottom of the bin. They get taken to the community garden, and there we grow some healthy food. And then we end up with things in the food pantry that people don't necessarily know how to prepare, because we didn't all grow up preparing broccoli that wasn't pre-cut and frozen. So when we're bringing these fresh whole foods into the pantry, that come from the garden, we need our nutrition education program. And we have Kate Young, who is our staff member that runs the nutrition program. So then Kate works with nutrition volunteers and interns to do sample tables. Maybe if it were broccoli, it might be a simple stir fry. Our sample tables are anything that we, you know, can provide most of the ingredients in the food pantry or would be very inexpensive. And then are healthy. And tastes good, of course. It's got to taste good. Then, you know, it comes kind of food full circle. You know, it's that starts in the pantry. Food waste turns to healthy soil. The food grows. We promote it and teach people how to cook with it, whether it's in the pantry or at a cooking class. And then families are taking home healthy food.
And also, most of the patrons in these families also are volunteering in the organization itself.
Yep.
I mean, they're also circulating. Not just the compost is circulating, but
right.
But the volunteers are patrons themselves.
Right.
And we've talked about
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yep. If I go back to your curriculum, canning, jamming, bread baking, introduction to, how many of these classes do you teach?
Oh, how many do I teach? I teach most of the gardening classes. There's a few. We have some community experts, like our composter, Tom Shelton, who teaches our compost class. Community volunteers who teach classes. But I do a lot of the gardening classes, and Kate Young does a lot of the nutrition and cooking classes. I can't, as you can probably tell, I can't talk enough about gardening. So I really enjoy teaching classes about organic gardening.
All right, we've got a few minutes left, and I want to do a little hypothetical. I need some food. I'm lost my job. I don't have as much income as I used to, and I'm having some situations with food. And I come to you, and I want to get involved in gardening. Where do you take me? Take me through it.
Well, you have lots of options. We'll talk about where your day-to-day life has you, so wherever the easiest garden to get to is. And we have, you know, three different gardens that are active right now that someone could choose from to come and work with us in. And this would be a great time of the season for that to happen, because not only are you coming out and, you know, spending time in the garden working with other people, but you can also harvest and take food home with you. And that can work, you know, it works in two powerful ways. Either you don't have anywhere to grow food, and so you grow food with Mother Hubbard's Cupboard in the community gardens and take food home with you. Or you come and work with us a couple times, get inspired, get confident about, you know, that you can plant a seed and it's going to grow some food. And then go back if you have some land, or even not much land, a little sunny spot in your yard or on your porch, and start growing some of your own food.
So even if my first day of involvement was tomorrow, say, mm-hmm. I could come and still get something out of the garden.
Oh, yeah. So tomorrow is Wednesday, and every Wednesday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we're working in the Banneker Community Center Garden. So you would come and you'd work with us. I think we've got some greens right now. We might have some green beans coming on. I know there's some squash coming on right now. So black raspberries would be another option. So yeah, there would definitely be food to take and great crew of people working there on Wednesday mornings.
I could come every day and work in a garden somewhere.
Well, Monday, we're from 5:30 to 7:30, we're in the Harmony Garden. Tuesday from 5 to 7, we're in the Crestmont Garden. Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we're in the Banneker Garden. Thursdays, we're doing our youth programming, but you could definitely go and hang out and harvest food at the garden that you like to work in. Friday mornings from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we're in the Crestmont Community Garden again.
So every day, there's some gardening that I can participate in.
Certainly. Even on Saturday and Sunday, you could go and pick some basil.
So I get myself a big old bag of black raspberries, and I decide, with your encouragement, that I want to make some jam. Now what?
Yes. Well, you could even go and learn from Kate Young at the farmer's market. There are two dates in July where she's going to be doing demos on canning and jamming. Or you could sign up for, in September, our jams and jellies class, or our food preservation class.
And these classes are free.
Yes, they are free classes we have a suggested donation for folks who don't meet the guidelines to shop at the Hub, but they are free to our patrons.
Okay, and then I want to can some things. Right, I'm going to pick some things and I want to can them. Where would I go for that?
Well, we have a canning and a food preservation class. And so, and if you couldn't make the classes, you would talk to Kate in the pantry and she would give you book suggestions, handouts on canning, all kinds of info.
And let's see, what else do we have on our list? Bread baking?
Oh, yes, bread baking. I talked about how you can save a lot of money by baking your own bread, and I guarantee it's very likely to be a whole lot healthier than the bread that you're going to buy from the store. So, yeah, it's a great option, saving money, being healthier.
One last thing that you mentioned that I didn't get a chance to ask you about are these farm tours. What farms do you see with the farm tours?
Well, this summer we're going to Grown in Town Farm, which is an in-town permaculture farm. But we've also, earlier this season, we went to Maple Valley Farm, which is an incredible local farm. So we've gone to a lot of different farms, but those are the two for this season.
And if people want to volunteer, who should they call? What number?
They can call 812-355-6843, or they can visit us on the web at mhcfoodpantry.org, and they can even apply to volunteer online.
I have been speaking with Stephanie Solomon, Garden and Nutrition Coordinator, and Amanda Nicky, Director of Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
As we come to the end of another segment of Interchange, let's tune in to a song by the late Bob Marley. It's a song that places a sort of poetic emphasis on food and hunger.
Them belly full, but we hungry. A hungry mob is a hungry mob. A rain a fall, but it's tough. A yacht.
Thanks to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by William Morris. The executive producer is January Jones. Original theme music by Jameel Effiam. Stay tuned now for Brother Tillman on Stardust, coming up next on your community radio station, WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.